First today, the daughter of a legend is here in the studio with me. Kim Parker, daughter of the late, great Charlie Parker, is here to talk about life growing up with a dad who only lived to be 34, but who changed jazz and left behind a body of music that continues to dazzle and influence all these decades later. Kim Parker is in town for the ongoing Charlie Parker celebration in the 18th and Vine District and around town. And Kim, welcome. Welcome back to Kansas City.
Thank you,
Steve. So nice to have you.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
You know, there is a 10-foot-tall memorial to Charlie Parker in the 18th and Vine District. It's a bronze head likeness of Charlie with the words "Bird Lives" underneath it. I'm wondering, how have you reacted to that sculpture when you've seen it?
Well, I was here for the dedication.
Yeah.
And I've been calling it the big fat head ever since.
It
is a big fat head. And actually, I did not like it. And Robert Graham gave me a
miniature of it.
A miniature, yeah. And I love that. But I didn't really feel that it looked like Bird. However, I saw it the other day and I like it now. And the reason that I like it is that the face is weathered, and it just brings so much more character to the sculpture and to Bird. I mean, you can see rivulets going down his cheeks, and it's almost
from the rain.
It's almost like either tears or age. It's a relief for me to. I mean, I still call it the big fat head, but I have an affection for it now.
You know, this town is featuring more than two solid weeks of events commemorating Charlie Parker's life, and you've partaken in a good chunk of it. What do you make of all this?
Well, I'm delighted. I'm delighted that the Bird is so honored in this city, and there are so many people involved in this. And it's like gathering momentum, I feel.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm particularly happy to be here, because I'm here in the role of cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, if I can whip people into a frenzy, then that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And I'm really serious about it. You know, of course, I mean, I'm tongue in cheek, but I'm serious. And because it's very strange to be my age. I just last Friday had my 68th birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. But I used to talk about things in terms of years. Now I talk about things in terms of decades. I remember that. I still have that skirt. Well, yeah, I had it in 1962. Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like that. But it's wonderful. And it's wonderful that so many people have come together behind these activities, that they're well thought.
Yeah.
I'm very, very proud to have been asked to participate.
Kim, what do you think Charlie Parker would have thought about all this? I mean, all these years later, given his own time in Kansas City, you know, what do you think he'd make of this today if he could only glimpse it for a second?
I think he would be delighted.
I bet.
I think he would be really thrilled. He'd have a big chuckle. And but I think in his heart, you know, he would really feel very, very happy to be the focus of positive attention.
Because he had good times here and he had tough times here. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think so. I know that he struggled to get the music that he heard in his head out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, of course, when he was a young child. He became a professional musician, I think, at the age of 15, and was gigging. And he still hadn't found what he was hearing. And I know that he went through dues when he was sitting in with people or, you know, jamming or cutting contests, whatever, when he was striving and he got knocked down a bunch of times,
mm-hmm.
but he crawled away and he took care of it. You know, he worked hard, and rumor has it, or I guess it can be proved maybe, but you know, he was playing 15 hours a day, just woodshedding to figure it out.
And he was actually kicked off the bandstand here a couple times early in his life when he didn't quite have it yet, right?
And the thing is, he was such a mama's boy, you know, so he wasn't used to hearing no.
Mm-hmm.
And so that must have been very hard for him.
You know, do I understand right? You consider him your father, Kim, but he was not your natural father.
I mean,
who was that?
I don't know.
Yeah. Just you never met that person in
no,
your life.
No, I mean, I sort of know, but I don't know. I thought I had another father before Bird, but it turned out he wasn't my father either. So I just gave up.
You met Charlie Parker. How old were you?
I met him before I became conscious or aware of meeting him. He saw me, I was pretty much in his life, I think, from about 4 and a half.
So old enough to remember.
Well, I remember my fifth Christmas with him, and so I remember back to that.
What do you remember about your fifth Christmas with Charlie Parker?
Well, all I wanted were, in the back of comic books, you know, you can get like 100 toy soldiers for a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I wanted 100 toy soldiers because I thought, wow, 100 of them, you know, that's incredible. And I wanted a triangle.
A musical triangle. Did you get them?
Yes. I was an odd child.
And did he show you how to play it?
No. But we did have matching ocarinas. I remember that. I remember being at home with him, and he was not at home that frequently.
I was going to say.
Because he was on the road. So it was always very special when he came home. And he just gave me lots of love.
He walked you to school, too, didn't he? Or picked you up from school?
No, he walked me to school once. And this is a story that I have told before, so I've lost my embarrassment about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will relate it here, if you like.
Yeah.
Well, when I went to first grade, both my parents were sleeping. I got myself up. I got myself dressed. I made myself breakfast. I prepared and packed a lunch for myself, and I walked myself to school. Now, I would throw up in class every day at 10:30.
This is 10:30.
10:30. Yeah.
What was happening at 10:30?
Well, I don't know. It was my limitation. You know, first of all, I could not figure out what these young people running around me were. I mean, I had no idea what kids were or school was.
Because.
Because I kind of grew up in nightclubs, and I didn't know what horrible thing I had done to deserve this terrible fate. So, you know, by the time 10:30 rolled around, I'd had it. I wanted to get out of there, you know. Another little girl would poop in her pants at 11. and then we became like, you know, twins in our bodily fluids, so the janitor would just stay outside the classroom basically.
Look at his watch and say, "I got to go in now."
Bucket and a mop, and after about 4 or 5 days of this, they sent a note home with me. This child must go to a doctor.
Mm.
So Bird took me to the doctor. And the doctor interviewed me, and he said, "There's nothing wrong with her. She's scared, and you should walk her to school."
Mm.
And Bird did. And the end of this story, that's actually the moral of this story, is that I was colorblind and walking in holding my huge daddy's hand made me okay. So there I was with this black man in my class, and it didn't occur to me that this was going to make me even weirder in school. It calmed me down.
This was in New York, right?
Yeah, New York City.
So it made a big difference.
Made a huge difference.
What a wonderful memory.
Yeah.
I mean, if nothing else, what a great memory.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how it happened.
You know, we're visiting with Kim Parker, the daughter of Charlie Parker. She's in town for the ongoing Charlie Parker celebration around town. You know, lots of events still on the calendar in connection with the celebration. In fact, folks, on Friday and Saturday at noon, there will be 21 sack salutes for the bird at Lincoln Cemetery, just outside of town where he's buried. The Saturday event features a reception and a jam session back in the Blue Room at 18th and Vine. If you haven't been to one of these things, and I've been to several, go. It's a quintessential kind of Kansas City gathering. So fun. For more information on the 21 sack salutes or a map of how to get there, you can go to AmericanJazzMuseum.org. We hope to have a link to that on our website later on today, KCUR.org. But you'll need a map to get there. It's a little tricky to get up the hill to the cemetery there, but it's worth going to. Kim, your mother was Chan Parker. Tell us about her, because she came to love jazz in her life, right?
She, in high school, she was in the band. She played trumpet, and sometimes she played piano. But as far as the trumpet playing went, she wanted to develop her lip like Roy Eldridge. And this, you know, this is a very attractive young lady in school wanting to get a lip like a famous
a great trumpet, goal, yeah,
trumpet player. And Frank Sinatra was her big crush.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother worked in the Cotton Club, checking hats and coats. And Cab Calloway would come over after the gig. Musicians would come over after the gig, and so my grandmother was involved in that life also. And it was my mother who convinced my grandmother to move to 52nd Street, which is essentially where I was born.
And where a lot of jazz was, right?
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
52nd Street in Manhattan.
In Manhattan.
Yeah.
And so I was right there on the block from the beginning, and I could walk at all hours up and down the block, and all eyes were on me. Everybody knew me. Everybody looked out for me. And so I was the kid on the block.
And did you like the music at that age, or did it take a while for you to develop a taste for it?
It took me a while.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, Frank Sinatra, but I mean, Bird didn't play jazz in the house. We had classical music.
I was going to ask you.
Or he liked Peggy Lee. Peggy Lee and Ema Sumac and, you know, just offbeat things.
But not jazz in the house.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
Because?
Well, he wouldn't even let musicians in the house.
Because?
Joe Albany came by my little baby sister was out front in her carriage, and he started, you know, Googling to her, talking to her, and Bird came out and ran him off.
Why?
He didn't want that element in our house.
He wanted to separate his work from his home.
He didn't want anything to touch us that might be unsavory.
Did he regard jazz as unsavory?
The people he was involved with, a lot of them, yes. Yes, and his life also in jazz as unsavory. Now, that didn't mean we didn't have scenes in the house, because we did.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, if there were any scenes, my mother would rush me uptown to my grandmother's, so I would be there for extended stays.
As your mom and dad worked out whatever they were working out.
Yeah, they had their scene, and you know, and I don't remember Bird as being the baddie. I remember my mother as being the baddie.
Oh, really?
Well, because she was the one who was arguing, and Bird didn't really argue. He just created the scene and let you fend for yourself.
So when Bird was just hanging out at home, what would he do? You mentioned the music. Would he watch TV? What was he into?
He was into cowboy and Indian shows on TV, yeah. And I tell the story because I don't have that many stories, but we were walking uptown on 6th Avenue, and he saw Gabby Hayes, who was the sidekick, I think, of Roy Rogers, and, you know, famous at the time, famous TV show. And Gabby Hayes was Roy's sidekick, I guess. And Bird went crazy and ran up to him and hugged him, and this poor man was, like, standing there with this black man surrounding him with his arms. And he got his autograph. He was so thrilled.
He was just that was the tops for him.
Well, it was, and I'm much the same way. You know, it's these little things that just really make your day. And I think Bird was like that too, like running into Moondog on the street, and you know.
Just so folks understand, your mother was regarded as quite the catch.
She was. There were a lot of people in love
Beautiful
with her.
Beautiful woman.
There were a lot of people in love with her. And she was dubbed the Queen of 52nd Street. And she was in and out of clubs all night long. And she knew what was good. That was part of her charm.
In terms of
jazz, of music. She knew what was good. And To her dying day.
And what was it like to walk down the street with Charlie in those days? I mean, and so just so our listeners have some context, Charlie and Dizzy Gillespie, you know, more or less discover and bring bebop to the scene late 30s, early 40s. We're talking 10 years down the road here, so he's an icon. What was it like walking down the street with him?
It was great because he was so full of life, and you know, he would notice things that, you know, other people just might not notice. Also, because he was bigger than life physically as well as his talent, he drew a lot of attention, and people were very attracted to him just because of his nature and his capacity.
He was an extrovert, at least on the outside.
Yeah.
But at home, he was quieter and, am I gathering that?
Well, you know, I don't remember him at home all that much. But he loved snakes in a can.
Why not, right?
Near Roseland, they had a big magic shop, a huge magic shop with all kinds of buzzers, you know, that you shake hands with somebody and you got a buzzer in your palm and scare the hell out of them. And then he bought me a can of peanut brittle, which was snakes in a can. And so he really loved a lot of moronic stuff.
You know, you were with him in the final years of his life. You know, he dies in, 55 at age 34, Kim.
Yeah.
And these were hard years for him. He's battling drug addiction. He's really suffering in so many ways. Were you aware of that? Did you understand any of that at that point in your life, or were you just too young?
I was aware of it. I didn't understand it. It was just, you know, when you're a kid, you just think this is the way it is for everybody. You don't really know that it's exceptional. That's why my mother moved us to New Hope, Pennsylvania, because she really wanted to get Bird to Europe, but New Hope, Pennsylvania was what she could manage at the time, and she really wanted to get him away from the elements that so beleaguered him.
You know, Your stepsister, Pri, suffered from cystic fibrosis, and she died in the 1950s, not long before Charlie died. I'm wondering about the loss of Pri and what effect that had on your mom and dad, because I've read it was very difficult.
It was very difficult. There is a picture in print of my mother and Bird looking down at my younger brother, Baird, who was a year younger than Pri. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at him, and he's just, you know, just standing there. But they're looking down at him with such sorrow in their body. Their body language just it tells it all. And as far as I can gather, the big blow up at Birdland happened, I think, on the 1 year anniversary of Pri's death.
The big blow up between your mom and your dad?
No. Between Bird and the musicians on the bandstand.
Okay.
And he kept screaming,
right.
Bud Powell, come back, Bud Powell. And that, you know, he was not in good form that night, and he was pretty out of his mind. And I think it was because it was the anniversary of my sister's death. And so he died one year and 1 week after she died.
What do you remember about the passing of Charlie Parker?
My mother, I didn't really understand this until I read Chuck Haddock's book.
Mm-hmm. A good book, by the way.
Oh, it's a wonderful book. I didn't really realize that my mother had rented a different house and that Bird didn't actually know where we were.
Mm.
And my grandmother was at the house, and my mother she had a gig checking hats and coats in Trenton, New Jersey, which was a half an hour ride from where we were living.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother was babysitting, and I was there, and we got a phone call that Bird had died. And my grandmother was upset. She told me, and I didn't really understand what death was, really, but death just meant you went away.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, not like kids today, I'm just much more informed earlier. Mm-hmm. But we... then we got a call that was a rumor, it wasn't true.
Mm.
And then we got a call that, yes, it was true. And all I know in retrospect is that Nika von Koenigswarter, the Baroness...
Where he died, in her home.
He had died there, but he'd also been there for a day or two
mm-hmm.
before he died. And she was trying frantically to try to find out where my mother was so that she could tell my mother rather than have my mother hear it from mm-hmm. someone else. And so I was there, and I knew before my mother knew. And my grandmother did not call the club where my mother was working because she didn't want my mother driving home in a state, you know. So she waited until my mother got home from work to tell her. And then I went off to school the next morning, and they came and they picked me up, and we went to New York. But I stayed at my grandmother's house, so I was not a part of any of the funeral proceedings.
It's been 59 years.
It's incredible.
59 years.
Yeah.
Does it seem like it's been that long?
I don't know. I'm just starting to get used to talking about things not in terms of years, but decades.
Yeah.
And it's weird when you get older and you just start thinking, oh, well, yeah, that happened 50 years ago. I mean, you know, it's crazy.
If you had a chance, what would you ask him? What would you want to talk to Charlie about? You know, if you could visit with him now that you're an adult and you have some perspective on all this, you know, where would you want to go with this, Kim?
I was thinking the other day, and I it's not where I'd actually want to go, but I was thinking the other day, I thought that it never occurred to me before. And that is, in terms of racism, what was Bird's level of rage? I would want to know that.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And that's not, you know, that's not the easiest place to go to, or the most happy place to go to, but it occurs to me that, you know, he was so strong and so powerful, it seemed to me. Why wasn't he able to control things a little bit better? But it's a different world now.
You recently came across some old letters, I'm told. Anything that you found in those that took you aback or surprised you? Or
Well, yeah, it took me back how many people were in love with my mother. And we got a letter from Bird's mother, Addie, in 1964, asking if my brother Baird had received any of the money from the estate, the royalties, because she hadn't gotten anything. And Bird's first son, Leon, that he had with Rebecca, neither of them had gotten any money from the estate. Hmm. Now, my mother and I received nothing from the estate. We never did. We never saw a penny, and we were just shut out of it. And my mother had to sort of sign away everything in order for my brother Baird to be recognized as a legitimate heir, because it was a common law marriage. And yeah. Baird was already a twice-time bigamist. And so, I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. I have their wedding rings.
Really?
Yeah. You would not believe. I mean, Baird's wedding ring is so huge. That like a mouse could use it for a hula hoop. It's really, really big.
Do you have any of his horns?
Yeah, I have the king.
Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. Well, you are our last sort of tie to Charlie Parker.
Isn't that amazing?
Isn't that amazing? And it's so wonderful to have you in Kansas City celebrating his life with us and his legacy and what he brought to the world, which is so amazing.
Thank you very much.
What a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
That's Kim Parker, the daughter of the late, great Charlie Parker. Again, if you want more information on all the events going on with the ongoing Charlie Parker celebration, go to AmericanJazzMuseum.org. And keep in mind a couple events Friday and Saturday at noon, 21 sax salutes to Charlie Parker at the Lincoln Cemetery just outside of town. For a map on how to get there, you can go to kcur.org right now, or you can also go to AmericanJazzMuseum.org for more information about all that. It's a neat event. If you have a chance, go out and check it out. Kim, thanks again.
You're very welcome.